If you would, take out your Bibles and open up to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. I'll start you off with a big loaded question. Been going through the book of Hebrews for more than 2 months. So far through the book, finishing really 3 chapters already, what have been your takeaways from the book? What are the things that maybe at the conclusion of this study that you will take to heart and always remember? Better. You see how Jesus is better than angels, better than Moses, better than prophets, better than the men of old, and to see this betterness aspect and what he brings in terms of a better covenant. What else? What we have in Scripture is complete. We don't need something more. What else? Don't be complacent, because if you just stay where you are, you'll drift away from Christ. What else? All right, Jesus is our high priest, and really those things are going to get even more so as we get through the rest of the book, but definitely so. Don't question God, listen to Jesus. Fantastic. Start to realize, really, is this the way that we listen to Jesus and the things that he teaches and says? What else? I think there's a pretty good nest egg of what we've been going through, right? I want you to kind of notice in Hebrews chapter 3, there's a certain quotation that shows up over and over and over and over and over again. 5 times it gets brought up. The quotation comes out of Psalm 95. What I want to do this morning is take some time to look back at Psalm 95, kind of get our hands a little dirty in those things so that we can really apply them and see an even broader aspect of what's going on here in Hebrews chapter 3 and 4. Now, Rick, real quickly, in Hebrews chapter 3, look down at verse 7. Says, therefore, just as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me, as in the day of trial in the wilderness, where your fathers tried me by testing me and saw my works for 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with this generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. And you would assume, okay, he's already said it once, so he's made his point. Look down at verse 15 of the same chapter. While it is said, even verse 14, for we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end. While it is said, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. And you go, okay, he's made his point, right? Then you get to chapter 4, look at verse 3. For we who have believed enter that rest, just as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Sound like we're beating a dead horse yet? Well, he's not done yet. Look down at verse 5. And again, in this passage, they shall not enter my rest. Okay, that's 4 times. Surely that's sufficient, right? But all of a sudden in verse 7, you're actually going to learn who wrote the book of Psalms, and he's going to say it again. He again fixes a certain day today, saying through David, after so long a time, just as has been said before, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. What do you think the point is? Don't doubt it. Don't harden your hearts, and if you do harden your heart, what can you expect out of the Lord? You will not enter his rest. And you think about the language that he uses. I swore in my anger. What do you already know about the way God keeps promises? He keeps them. You ever made some statement And I'm not going to go down the route of whether it was good or bad. But you get so angry at something that you go, I will never for the rest of my life ever allow this to happen again. And you realize, and we're kind of wishy-washy sometimes on promises. We ought not be. But at the same time of going, what about when God swears something? What do you know? It was already 100% faultless going to be kept. But then he swears about it in his wrath. What do you know most certainly? It's not going to ever change, right? Now, you see all these quotations come out of Psalm 95. That's where each one of these comes out of. Look back to the Old Testament, to Psalm 95. Because I want you to understand the context of these statements. Because it is vital through these two chapters. Psalm 95, look at verse 1. I think it'll remind you of song that sometimes we sing, right? Sometimes we sing songs, and if you know it, kind of sing along. Come, let us sing with joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him in music and song. For the Lord is a great God, a great King above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, he made it in his hand. They form the dry land. Now, look at these first few verses and see if that seems any way familiar. Doesn't that sound like a cheerful, encouraging song? And remember, who wrote Psalm 95? David did. And you don't know that until you get over to Hebrews. Isn't that something? Now, Psalm 95, verse 1. Oh, come, let us sing for joy to the Lord, the covenant God. He keeps his promises. Let us shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation. He says, let us come before his presence with thanksgiving. Let's stand before God and be grateful people. He says, let us shout joyfully to him with psalms. Maybe like Psalm 95. Verse 3. For the Lord, the covenant God, is a great God and a great King above all gods. How does he stand in the realm of creation? Above all, nothing compares. King. Then, King above all gods. Verse 4. In whose hand are the depths of the earth? Does he just hold the top? All the way down to the deepest reserve. He says, the peaks of the mountains are his also. How high does he reign over? You can go to the very top of Mount Everest. He reigns just as much there as he does in the depths of the ocean and beyond. Then, verse 5. The sea is his, for it was he who made it, and his hands formed the dry land. And you go, his hands formed the dry land. If you go back to creation, when did dry land show up? Maybe I'll say that. How did dry land show up? When God said it, and what happened to the waters? They receded. They went into another place. He says, the sea is his, for it was he who made it, and his hands formed the dry land. So what should be the outcome of seeing the God that we serve? Verse 6. Come, let us worship and bow down. Oh, this is different than the way it started, right? At first it says, let's sing for joy to the Lord, joyfully to the rock of our salvation. Now he's saying what? Now, come, let us worship and bow down. It's time to submit. Isn't that what kings are leading you toward? Are you going to submit? How does it go in a kingdom when the subjects don't submit to the king? Rebellion. And what's the outcome typically? Death. Death. Do you think this is any different with Jesus? You want some other king? What's it going to cost you? It'll cost you your soul. It'll cost you your life. He says, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. Everything was created through who? Jesus. And nothing has been created apart from him. Right? That's what John 1 talks about. Verse 7. Now it becomes a personal side. For he is our God. Can you really claim him to be your God if you're not going to bow your knee before him and be in subjection to him? Would you be in full subjection to someone who you thought, man, maybe they're the king? No. He says, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. If we're sheep, what does that make him? Not only a king, but also a shepherd. Let's see, are there any shepherd kings in the Old Testament? Like maybe the very one who's writing this, inspired by God. And then in the New Testament, who's the shepherd king? Jesus Christ the righteous. He says, we are the people of his pasture. He says, and the sheep of his hand. Here we go. Today, if you would hear his voice. Why does he say if? There is a choice. And notice how present David makes this. He says, today. So every time that David was going to sing this psalm, what was he always encouraging his listeners and singers, fellow singers, to actually think about? Are you ready to listen today? Not later. Today. Chuck. Right. Are we going to hear? So, here's David. Today, if you would hear his voice, he is our God. He's our maker. We live in his creation. He is the king. He is our shepherd. Are we ready to bow down? Now, what do you think the Hebrew people are struggling with in the New Testament book? Am I going to bow down to Christ or am I going to go back to Moses? What would David tell you? You better bow today. Not tomorrow. Not next week. He says, today. Now, notice how it continues. What can get in the way of this? Verse 8. Do not harden your hearts. What does a hard heart refuse to do? Hear, listen, submit. A hard heart lacks one drastic quality, humility. There has to be a faith response here, right? Now, he says, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah. And we're going to look at that here in just a moment. He says, Meribah? We'll deal with what's going on there because that even tells us something more specific. He says, as in the day of Massa in the wilderness. And Meribah means to quarrel. Massa means to test or even temptation. He says these things together. So let's go look at the story that this comes out of. Look back at Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. Now, just so you know, chronologically speaking, they had crossed over the waters and the Egyptian army had been destroyed in chapter 15, or 14 and 15. Then at the end of verse 15, the people start to grumble because they go, where's the water? Where's the water? And then in chapter 16, they start to wonder where they're going to eat, and then God provides manna. And then they go, well, it's just bread. What about meat? We want meat. We want it. And they start to complain again, and then God provides meat for them. And so you start to kind of go through these things together. They learn about the Sabbath. All of a sudden, here's chapter 17, verse 1. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Zin. I know it looks like sin, but it's Zin. According to the command of the Lord, are they following? The Lord said, let's go. And what do? They're obedient. Sounds like things are going a little bit better, right? Well, let's see. And camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Uh-oh. Here's this big old massive group, more than a million people. I mean, we know for sure there are over 600,000 men who are aged 20 to 50. So I'll let you kind of figure out what you think there, but I'm sticking with more than a million. Here they are, no water to drink. What do you expect the children of Israel to do? They have seen God's hand at work in all those plagues. They have seen God deliver all their firstborn, while whenever they were leaving, all the Egyptians are doing what with their firstborn? Burying them. And as they're leaving, they plunder them as they go out, right? Take gold, clothes, all kinds of things. And so, since God has provided for them, He's overcome this humongous army of the Egyptians. He's given them manna to eat. He's giving them all these things together. They've had water turned from bitter to being fresh a couple chapters back. Now here they are in verse 2. Therefore, the people quarreled. Let's make some applications, see if we're listening to the voice of Jesus too. Do you ever, before you're going to complain, think about all the things that God has already done for you? We usually don't, do we? You ever wondered what we're doing? Let's read and find out. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" Who is really on the recipient end of the complaint department? Who are you filing your complaint with? The King of Kings, the Shepherd of the Sheep. Well, verse 3. But the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, "Why now have you brought us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? Why'd you go to all the trouble to bring us out here just to die?" Do we ever think that way too? Numbers 11 goes into this far more detail. I'll let you read that on your own. Do we ever think, you know, I had it better when I was dead in my sins? When I could really make my own choices. When I didn't submit myself to Jesus, life was great. You ever think that? You ever think that and be honest? Then what are we complaining about? Why are we testing the Lord? Chuck? Right, looking for that opportunity to be used as a servant rather than getting what we want. And right. What are you going to do about it? Notice here they are. They're already going to the nth degree. We're just going to die. They've already been taken care of with water before. Then, verse 4. So Moses cried out to the covenant God, saying, "What shall I do to this people? A little more and they will stone me." How does Moses feel about this situation? I mean, it tells you a little bit about the way these people are quarreling. He's not going, you know, they're just a little upset. He's saying, if I push this thing even further, I'll be dead. Now, here it is as it continues, verse 5. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff with which you struck the Nile, and go." Now, what happened back in Exodus chapter 7 whenever Moses struck the Nile River with his staff? What happened to the water? Turned to blood. the biggest blood drive you ever saw. But instead of giving life, what did it give? Death. Everything that, all the fish died. If you think sometimes fish stink for a little bit, what about if they're all dead there on the river? And do you remember what it did to Pharaoh's heart? Hardened his heart. You can read about it in Exodus 7. All of a sudden, here he's seeing the power of what God can do. And it even talked about he could get his own magicians to do the same thing. It's like, I wonder how. If all the water's already been turned to blood, where's the good water to turn that way? But here it is as it continues. And so the last time he had used this staff, it had changed all the water into blood. Uh-oh. What does it sound like here? Because he hadn't told him he's going to take care of everything yet. He just says, all right, here it is. But he's going to change it here. Verse 6. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb. The Hebrew word for Horeb, you'll love this. You know what it means? To dry up. Oh. Let's go to the desert for the rain. Horeb is about to dry up or to be dryness. He says, and you shall strike the rock and water will come out of it that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So what's Moses' response to God's command? I'll do it. I'll do it. And notice what happens. Verse 7. Well, we're not going to get to that. What happened. Verse 7. He named the place Massa. Remember this being brought up in Psalm 95? And you think about Massa means to test. Whenever we become complainers, we're testing God. Because usually when people are complaining, they're saying, somebody didn't get this right. Correct? Let's take this down to a lower level. When you step into the business and all of a sudden you see the complaint box, usually the complaint box is full of people who said, I didn't get treated the way I wanted to be treated. So if we have complaints against God, what are we saying about him? You didn't treat me right. You think that's accurate? Never. He always treats us right. Right. And that comes by grace and mercy, right? So you see those aspects. Then here they are. He says he named the place Massa and Meribah. Meribah is about quarrel. He says, because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, this is the test. Is the covenant God, is the Lord among us or not? When things don't go the way we want them to go, what's our question? Where's God in this? Is God really with me or not? Now, there is the testing of God. If God were really with us, we'd already have plenty of water. Or maybe we just become obedient and faithful to him. Now, there's another story I want to show you. Also uses Meribah. Look over at Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. Numbers 20 is an amazing chapter to me. It begins with the passing of Moses' older sister by the name of Miriam, who was very vital in God using her so that Moses actually survived childhood. The end of the chapter is going to be the death of Aaron, his brother. And sandwiched between these two situations, losing a sibling at the beginning of the chapter and another sibling at the end of the chapter, you get this story in between. And I want you to kind of notice. Does God go, oh, I know you're grieving, so the standard's different? Pay attention. Verse 2. Once again. There was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves before Moses and Aaron. The people thus contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Oh, if we'd only died. If we think death is the escape, what does it say about our relationship with God? Verse 4. Why then have you brought the Lord's assembly into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die here? Why have you made us come up from Egypt to bring us in this wretched place? It is not the place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there water to drink. Then Moses and Aaron came in from the presence of the assembly to the doorway of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to them, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, now hold on one second. I want you to notice, people complain. What's the first response of spiritual leaders? We better go to the Lord. They go to the tent of meeting. And you may think, oh, that's fantastic. Problem solved. Well, be careful. Still got decisions to make. The Lord appeared to them, verse 8. Lord spoke to Moses. Take the rod. Oh, we're back to this rod again. And you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock and let the congregation and their beasts drink. How simple could it be? Speak to the rock. Doesn't even say what to say. He says, just speak to the rock and what's going to come out of it? Well, that's just as natural as it can be, isn't it? You ever get thirsty? Just go talk to a rock. Who does Moses trust? It seems like he trusts God until we get to the next couple of verses. Isn't it amazing how God makes things so simple? And we have a knack for making it so complicated. Verse 9. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, listen now, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? What did Moses know about the people? They're rebellious. Who are they rebellious against? The covenant God, who took care of everything they needed. Then he says, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? What a question. I'm not sure they knew the plan. Verse 11. Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice. It doesn't say he dropped the staff and it accidentally hit the rock. You know, if you hit somebody in a car once, you call it an accident. If you hit them twice, it's on purpose. Here it is. It says, Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. Yet what did God do? What did God do for his people, even though the leadership wasn't going in the right direction? He still took care of his people. Isn't that something? Now, notice this next aspect. Because if you just read verse 11 and that was the end of the story, what would you think? Everything turned out okay. You know, Moses gave attention to the Lord. Then verse 12. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy. If you treat God as holy, what do you do in your life? Do exactly what he says. You go, what he says doesn't make sense, speaking to a rock to get water. But what should you do? Speak to the rock. Now, he says, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy. Can we claim to believe Jesus and not listen to what he says? And be honest? We can't, can we? Even Jesus talking, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Not do what I command you to do. How'd it turn out for those people? Not good. Cost them their life. He says, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. What did it cost Moses? You won't be leading my people into the promised land. Earlier in Exodus, Exodus chapter 4, there's a time where God is actually seeking to destroy Moses. Moses has not circumcised his son. And if you remember what circumcision and promise about the promised land. God was going to destroy Moses. Zipporah, his wife, circumcises her son, and she's not real happy about it. And then it says the Lord didn't seek to kill Moses. See, Moses wasn't always a good listener to God. But he had led God's people through the wilderness through so many different things. But now here's a time where you're not going to treat the Lord as holy to believe him. You're going to do it your own way. And he says, I can't let you enter into my rest. Right. Rather than the Lord. Without saying it's really God who's doing the work. All right. Now, notice how it continues on here. He says, treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. Says, your example before God's people is leading them away from me. Then notice verse 13. These were the waters of Meribah. He brings it up again. It says, because the sons of Israel contended with the Lord, and he proved himself holy among them. Whenever you see God is holy, what do? You listen and you obey, right? He says, you listen to what he instructs and you're obedient to what he says. He says, that's whenever you truly see God is holy. You don't just say, well, you know, he's different than others. No, when you see him as holy, what does your knee do? It bows down and kneels. Just like a sheep submitting to a shepherd, just like royal subjects submitting to the king. Chuck. All right. And it doesn't turn out well when you hit it. Then, you notice what's here, and you see these things pieced together. Come back to Psalm 95. So when you get to verse 8, well, verse 7, today if you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah. Did the children of Israel harden their heart? What did it cost them? It cost them the promised land. They died in the wilderness. Moses, even as a leader, doesn't treat God as holy. He tests God. What happens to Moses? Is he treated different because he's a leader? He doesn't make it into the promised land either. God was even so emphatic that in Deuteronomy chapter 3, the Lord tells Moses, don't even ask me to go in again. Ooh. You know, whenever parents say that to their kids, the kids go, ooh. And sure enough, Moses doesn't ask again. And you'll find out real quickly, here's why. Do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as in the day of Massa in the wilderness. Verse 9, when your fathers tested me, is God really here? You mean the same God that created you and created everything that you live in this world and creation? And you're saying, is there no Lord? Is there no God? Then he says, they tried me, though they had seen my work. And how up close and personal had they seen his work? Whew. 10 plagues worth, Egyptian army destroyed in one night, provided for. Verse 10. For 40 years I loathed that generation, hated, and said, they are a people who err in their heart and they do not know my ways. What got them there? Their hearts have become hardened, and they don't even know me. That's how hard they are. Did Pharaoh know God? How was his heart? Hard. And what did he get for it? Judgment. He got destruction. Then, notice how it continues, verse 11. Therefore I swore in my anger, truly they shall not enter into my rest. Why did God tell Moses, don't ask me again? It was already declared. He says, I've already swore in my anger, I'm not going to change it for you. Ooh, that's a different kind of testing, isn't it? I want you to protect me even though I'm going to do evil. What are you doing there? Remember Jesus when he's being tempted? Remember where the devil took him? Took him up on the pinnacle of the temple. And he quoted out of Psalms. Oh, just throw yourself down. He'll take you. Remember what Jesus said? Do not test God. Don't test him. And you see the parallel here of going, look, there are things that God has sworn to. And as we look through the book of Hebrews, I want you to look real quickly back at Hebrews chapter 3. Just look at these tail end verses in verse 15. He says, today if you hear his voice and not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. How serious is that? Difference between life and death. Verse 16. For who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses, all those men and women, he says, who were over the age of 20 when they left, what happened to every single one of them in the wilderness, those men? They all died without exception, except for Joshua and Caleb. How did they treat God? As holy. God said, we can take this land. He said, I've given you this land. And they said, let's go get it. Then, notice how it continues, verse 17. And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? They wouldn't bow the knee to the king. Verse 19. So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. If these people who are Israelites rebelled against Moses and got a judgment, what happens if you rebel against Jesus? Oh, we're not going to look at Jesus for who he is. King of kings, Lord of lords, chief shepherd, provider. You realize, we're giving up everything, and there will be no rest, period, none whatsoever. And if you want an extra thought here, on your own, go read the first 8 verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, because it talks about all these people came out. He says, are you going to speak to the rock? Because what will you find if you speak to the rock? You'll find life. You'll find it. Now, next week, Brent will come back. He'll start off in chapter 4. And then I just wanted to put these things in front of you to see look, if you reject Jesus, you're leaving everything good. There's nothing but bad left. You see how God's people were treated in the wilderness? And God swore about it. What about if we don't go after Jesus now? Same principle. There's only one way to the Father. All right. Have a great week.